Shalom, it's Rabbi Daniel Goldfarb again, and we're continuing about Maoz Tzur and Chanukah. We're at verse 4, my favorite. It's Purim. We're in Shushan. But note here what is and what isn't said. Quote, Koma Barosh Bikesh Agagai Ben Hamdata. A common translation of this first line, in the Herd Sidur, for example, is, Then vengeful Haman sought subtly to betray me. But that's not close to the Hebrew. Agagai, the son of Hamdata, sought to cut down a tall cypress tree, is the literal translation. We know the Agagi is Haman, from Esther 3:1. But what or who is the tall tree? It's Mordechai Hayudi, no relation to Mordechai, the author of the Piyut. Who stood, Mordechai the Yudi, in Shushan, stood tall and refused to bend or bow down to Haman. V'nahaitalo lapach umokesh. Haman's plan became his snare. He was literally hoisted in his own petard, as Hamlet would say. V'gavato nishbata, and his arrogance was stilled. Rosh yamini niseta, you raised the head of the Benjaminite, whom Esther 2:5 tells us was Mordechai. So Haman's plan to lower Mordechai does indeed backfire, because in fact it raises Mordechai up to Haman's job as number two in the kingdom. For Oyav Shmo Machita, and the enemy's name you wiped out, recalls the command in Deuteronomy 25:19 to blot out the name of Amalek, Haman's ancestor. So note, Mordechai the author here follows the directive from Deuteronomy. He does not mention Haman's name, though, as we saw, many translations do, assuming that most people reading the English would not understand the indirect reference. And remember the reference to Sar HaTabachim, Pharaoh's executioner, in the Joseph story we mentioned in verse 1, and the dreams of the two imprisoned ministers, all in Parshat Vayeshev, read just before or during Chanukah. Joseph there, in chapter 40 of Genesis, predicts that the chief butler's head will be raised in status or power. And to the chief baker he says, Pharaoh will lift up thy head and hang thee on a tree. And that is indeed what happened. Not only in Joseph's Egypt, in chapter 40, 20 through 22, but also in Shushan, a direct parallel, the heads of both Mordechai and Haman were raised, one in status and the other on the gallows. Once again, the victory is achieved at the expense of the enemy, who falls low, not in water as in verse 2, but with trees. Verse 5, Yevonim nikbatsu alai, the Greeks gathered up against me. Finally, sof Chanukah. In a few Siddurim, like the old Rabbinical Assembly Weekday Prayer Book from 1961, two verses were included from Maoz Tzur after the candle lighting, and this was the second. The English translation across the page was Children of the Martyr Race, also from the Jastrow de Poole translation, concluding, Yours the message cheering that the time is nearing, which will see all men free, tyrants disappearing, and which we will see is not connected to the subject of the Hebrew verse, or, to put it mildly, the content and mood of Maoz Tzur Bichlal at all. The optimism of the late 19th century Western world meets 13th century Jewry suffering under Christianity and the Crusades. So the Greeks gathered, nikbatsu. Like verse 3, here too we open with a literary reference to the story of the previous verse. Ubehikabetz na'arot rabot el shushan habira, it says in Esther 2:8 from the Purim story. Many maidens gathered in Shushan the capital for the selection of the new queen to succeed Vashti. The author repeats this technique for connecting verses. Azai bimei Hashmanim, in the Hasmonean times, denoting the line of the Maccabees, but the word Hashmanim is a pun. It also sounds like Hashmanim, the oils, a reference to Hanukkah and its oil. And indeed that word appears in the next line. They breached the walls, v'timu kol Hashmanim, and defiled all the oils. Voila, another liquid, representing here the two sides, the pure and the profane. This rhyme theme continues. Imnotak hankan kanim, from the last of the little vessels. Nasenes leshoshanim. A miracle was done for the shoshanim. It rhymes nicely with hashmanim and hashmanim, but what does it mean? The Jastrow de Solapool translation simply skips it. Didst thou show a wonder? With no reference to whom. Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs in 2:2, provides one answer. Keshoshanim ben achuchim. Like a lily amongst the thorns, an image of the people of Israel amongst the nations. But our author here had a keen ear. And the word Shoshanim sounds quite close to Shushanim, the residents of Shushan in the previous verse above Purim. We've seen he likes literary connection between verses and stories. But if he had a sense of humor and irony, we know it was secondary to his pain. Shoshanim appears also in the opening of Psalm 69, Lemanatzeach al Shoshanim leDavid, for the leader on Shoshanim of David. That's the translation of the New JPS version. And the footnote says the meaning of Shoshanim is uncertain. But the next line of this psalm is hardly unclear. Hoshieni Elohim ki bau mayim ad nafesh. Save me, God, for I'm in water up to my soul. It reminds us of the opening line of verse 2. Ra'ot sava nafshi. My soul is sated with sorrows, with troubles. Indeed, Swansino calls Psalm 69 a prayer of the persecuted, one which Mordechai evidently identified with. Note the next line of Psalm 69, verse 3. Tavati bivein metzula ve'ein ma'amad. I am sinking into the slimy deep, unable to stand. Yavein and slime, mire. But our author's sharp eye and ear lead to another pun. Read it as biyavan. We are sinking deeply into Greece. Wasn't this the parallel in the time of Hanukkah, a war of culture, not weapons? Similar to verse 3 on Babylonia, where the local culture, the poison wine, almost finished us. Psalm 69:3 was in the mind of the author, and perhaps in his readers as well, even if not quoted in Mao Zedong. The last line of this verse, B'nei Bina. One can even see the word Yavan in the letters here, perhaps an ironic reference. Men of insight, understanding, and what did they do? They fixed 8 days of rejoicing. The phrase B'nei Bina is based on 1 Chronicles 12:33, which Redax explains as the men who knew how to intercalate the calendar and to determine the months. So let's recap. As I said before, for many, Mao's Tzur ends here, after verse 5. What have we had so far? A somewhat pained opening verse, in the Hebrew at least, and 4 stages of Jewish history, each a time of great peril from which we were saved by God's intervention. The Arshkol Sidur says the Paitan recalls various exiles that the Jewish people endured. What did we have? Egypt, Babylonia, Persia, and Greece. Was Greece in exile? It happened in Eretz Israel, in the heart of Jerusalem. One reason many omit verse 6 is that it's likely not by our friend Mordechai, and not just because the acrostic of his name ends at verse 5. Scholars, including our own Ismar Shores, think it's a later addition, and perhaps one of several verses that were composed to close the piyut. So in this sense, the Sidurim that have omitted verse 6 have a sound historical basis for doing so. But those which chose to include it are telling us something as well. We'll see that those who rejected it may have been sensitive to considerations other than just history. Verse 6. Chasof zroa kodshecha. Bear your holy arm. We have an acrostic here, but not of a name. The first letters of the first 3 words spell chazak, an attribute the author is seeking. This verse is a plea for God to reveal his power on our behalf before all the nations, as it says in 52:10 of Isaiah, on which the phrase is based. But karev ketz ha-yeshua. The Hebrew is tricky, enigmatic. Hasten the end for salvation or of salvation. It can go both ways. Either bring salvation soon, or, if we read HaYeshua as a code for a name of similar sound, hasten the end of their salvation, of their Savior. This reading gets reinforcement further on in the verse. Nakom nikmat dam abdecha ma'uma harasha. Avenge vigorously the blood of your servant from the evil nation. The reader in the 13th or 14th century Ashkenaz would know exactly whom this verse is referring to. Too much Jewish blood, another liquid, was spilled during this period to leave doubt. And some of the Siddurim, which include verse 6, omit the word dam. I assume that it not be too gory. Ki arka lanu ha-Yeshua, ve'en kets li'yamei ha-ra'a. For the salvation is taking too long and is lasting too long. There's no end of our suffering. Of course, the ha-Yeshua here could be, again, a reference to their Savior. And the evil doesn't end. Our author, whether Mordechai or someone else, can't take it anymore. We've suffered enough. Genug. Dachei Admon, repel the red one. This could be a specific reference to the Holy Roman Emperor Frederick Barbarossa, leader of the Third Crusade, or to Rome, based on the rabbinic usage of Edom, Adom, red, for Esav, and later Rome and the Church. Betzel Salmon, again, an enigmatic phrase. It rings of Gate Salmavet in Psalm 23, the shadow of death. But it also includes the word Salem, cross or crucifix. This line seems to be asking for the defeat of the church at its very center, at the core. Hakem lanu roim shiva, established for us the seven shepherds. This is a plea for messianic redemption. The end of days, based on Micah 5:4, and send forth the seven shepherds. The Talmud in Sukkot 52b says this will be a phalanx of biblical heroes. David, Adam, Shet, Methuselah, Abraham, Jacob, and Moses, who will lead the victory over Israel's oppressors. Given the strong anti-Christian tone of the verse, we can understand why people like Rabbi Hertz in England in the mid-20th century omitted it, or others feeling compelled to keep it emended the text. And so Mao Zedong comes full circle, a plea for divine intervention to defeat the oppressors of the Jews. In the first verse, it was to enable a rebuilding of the temple and restoration of worship there. In the last, it looks beyond to messianic redemption. Mao Zedong is a pleading to God from a place of great pain and suffering. Four times in the past, the Jews have been on the ropes, our poet reminds God, and you have intervened to save them. Where are you now? How long do we have to suffer to wait? Some consider it a victory song, which is plausible if we read just through verse 5. But if, as Churchill wrote, in victory magnanimity, there is certainly none here. Mao Zedong, whether 5 verses or 6, is a zero-sum game. We can relax, we can rejoice, if they, the oppressors of the moment, are vanquished. That the battle is joined is a given, whether physical, as in Egypt and Persia, or spiritual, as Babylonia or Hellenistic Jerusalem. Other Jewish holidays extend a hand to the world. We don't say full Hallel on the last day of Pesach, because the Egyptian soldiers, also God's children, died in the Red Sea. The 70 nations of the world will come to Jerusalem on Sukkot. Even Purim carries a measure of hope. The Talmud in Sanhedrin 96b says the descendants of Haman will come to study Torah here, but not in Chanukah, at least as expressed in Mao's Tzur. This is strong stuff, hardball, hardly for children. Chanukah and Purim are the traditional historical holidays. Purim was easy, physical dangers, the lines clearly drawn. Hanukkah was much blurrier. No physical threat, just the danger of another culture, spiritual danger. And who were the enemies? The Greeks themselves or the Hellenized Jews? Hanukkah is where we define the lines between ourselves and the world. We light the candles to face outward at the time of day when it's getting dark, hard to see, to distinguish. In time and place, Hanukkah is our holiday on the edge, at the point where the Jewish home meets the culture outside, with its attractions and dangers, at twilight, between light and darkness, as the lines and borders blur. Purim was a miracle because we were saved from a situation where things had gotten so bad, very bad for the Jews. Hanukkah was a miracle because we were saved from a situation where things got good, too good, where the lines between the Jewish home and the world outside, between light and darkness, between Yisrael and the Amim, became blurred. We face both types of threats today, perhaps in different degrees in different communities, but the lessons of Hanukkah are hardly limited to the past, and the importance of the holiday should not be just for the children. And a P.S., Mao Tzur, so sensitive to the dangers we face with foreign cultures, became adapted to a German folk melody, perhaps of military origin, which has become as well-known a tune as we Jews have for any of our PU team, and a tune quite at odds with the somber mood of the text. I wonder what Mordechai would have thought of that. Chag Urim Sameach, Happy Hanukkah.